Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Helping those less fortunate than ourselves is all part of what makes us human. But I think when you've been in the person's position, it gives you a greater understanding of what their need is. And my next guest is the perfect example of that. Waheed Ariane, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. Good morning, everyone.
I'm delighted to talk to you, Waheed. For people who aren't aware, could you maybe start off by telling us a little bit about Afghanistan, how your family got out, and just, I suppose, your time as a refugee?
So first of all, I'm a NHS A&E doctor here. Have been serving on the front line since the beginning of the pandemic, very proudly. I'm also the author of the In the Wars memoir, which encapsulates my journey, which I'll describe now. So I was born in Kabul, Afghanistan, in 1983 during the Afghan-Soviet conflict. The first 5 years were spent hiding in cellars from the daily rockets, the bombs and the shellings. After that, we migrated to Pakistan as refugees, like so many other people from Afghanistan. We resided there in a refugee camp for about 2.5 years. Very soon, most of our family members and I, myself, we contracted to malaria. And as a family of 8 to 10, we were living in one muddy room with temperatures rising up to 45 degrees.
Sorry to interrupt you, Waheed. Can you just tell me what age you were around that time?
So that was aged 5 when we went to Pakistan.
Oh, God.
That's aged 5 when we went there. So there was really harsh conditions there. And soon I started coughing and I was diagnosed with tuberculosis, which is a life-threatening disease, especially in refugee camps. I started being treated by a doctor there. That was actually the inspiration for me to become a doctor in the future, because on one hand, I saw so much suffering in the camp. But I also saw that actually medicine can heal people. So we stayed there for 2.5 years. Before we left, he gave me a stethoscope and a black and white textbook. I had no idea what it was, but he said, son, one day you will need this because I think you will become a doctor. And I took them back with us to Afghanistan, aged 8. We went there in 91. So it's a brief history of Afghanistan as well. In 92, the civil war started that went on to 96. And because of that, we had to again hide in cellars from daily rockets, the bombs, the shellings. Back in those cellars is where my education happened, with a lamp under the table or the desk, because the rockets were coming on us. The schools were shut, hospitals were destroyed. But I had that inspiration that I want to do something with my life. I had no idea what, but I was hanging on to that hope that one day maybe I'll have a chance to go to school, to go to university and build a future for myself. In 96, the Taliban took over. That went on till 99, when I was 15 years old. And I saw that actually there was no future for me. My life was at risk. And all that hope that I was trying to accumulate or find in the darkness was completely evaporating.
So up until that stage, Waheed, you're 15 at that stage. Do you think the gift of that stethoscope and that book and being there looking at it when all the war was going on around you, the rockets and everything, is that what got you through?
It did, but also it's such a beautiful question, because many people, especially after COVID, will have been through so much that I'd like to highlight the importance of hope and not giving up. I was born into war. I did not know any other reality, but what I was hanging on to each day was just that maybe the next day is better. And that got me through every day, every month, every week, and every year, until 99 when I fled. And I can't emphasize enough that even in such situations of darkness, giving up, self-harming, trying to go down the route of negative coping mechanisms, for example, heavy drinking or overdose and all that, that's not the solution. Ultimately, life is very precious, and you will become somebody that you can be proud of, you can give to the community that I'm giving now. If I had given up on hope, I would not be here now.
I think a lot of people, because as you said there are people who can cling to the negative coping mechanisms. How do you cling to the positive ones? Like, how did you find hope?
It was extremely difficult for me, extremely hard. I think in Afghanistan, in conflict situation, you have no alternative. You either face death or complete mental devastation that you kind of like give up hope, or you have some sort of a hope to move, to survive. Mm. But I can tell you that how I built that coping mechanism here when I arrived in the UK in 1999 as a 15-year-old child refugee sent by my parents. They put all the money in the hands of an agent to send me because my life was at risk and I didn't have a future. When I landed here in London as a 15-year-old with no formal education or hardly any formal education, very $100 in my pocket, no family support, I had that determination, that dream that I wanted to do something with my life. I was excited on one hand and very happy that I was saved, the opportunities were there. But I was also really scared as a child. I was missing daily my family. I was crying about for them at nighttime. But the fact that I was dreaming that, you know what, I've got the opportunities now. Instead of crying, let me go on and seek these opportunities. And that was something that every day when I was something was happening for me, each step that I was taking forward was motivating in itself.
But I think dreaming or thinking about these opportunities is very, very different to enacting them and making them happen. You actually made them happen. How did you do that?
Again, it was small steps, actually. It's not giving up. On one hand, everything was against me. Even the people who I consulted, the fellow refugees, I asked them, I want to become a doctor. How do I do it? And they told me, Waheed, come on, you've come from Afghanistan. We know your background. You haven't been to school. Here, you're not white, and everything is against you. Why don't you just work, continue working? Of course, I admire work, and I continued working as a salesman, cleaner, as a kitchen porter. But I had that dream that, you know what, I would love to become a doctor so I can heal people. And of course, dreams vary. Every person has an amazing dream of their own. But that was my dream. To become a doctor, not a chicken wing specialist when they asked me to just work in a chicken shop. So that kept me going. I worked during the day. In evenings, I went to college. In 2003 was when I got my 5 A's in A-level and AS, and that got me into Cambridge University. So 2003 was when I got there. I went on also to study at Harvard and Imperial College. But it was not a smooth journey. I think that's another important point. That life is not a smooth journey. There is always all these various disappointments creeping in. I had my PTSD I had to work through. I did not know that I had PTSD, but most people who go through conflict, but now after COVID as well, they will have had PTSD or have PTSD.
Was that just from not knowing how to live somewhere that was not in a war zone?
Well, in a way, that because in a war zone, you're right. So in a war zone that you're on adrenaline, you're kind of like in a fight or flight mode that you have to run. But when I was here in safety, then my mind was telling me you have to run, but I was in safety. So in a way, I was hypervigilant. I would see, instead of a red bus, I would see that there was a tank appearing during the day. I would have nightmares. I thought, oh my God, these are just memories. I have just locked them away. But that's not how PTSD works. On reflection, after I became a doctor, I realized, oh my God, I was suffering from it for nearly a decade.
Wow.
But you know what started healing me was that still that the power of dream, the proper way of healing. I would recommend that if anybody has any symptoms, they really need to seek expert help. They don't need to suffer like I did for 10 years. For me, the coping mechanism I had accumulated in conflict was like exercise, positivity, power of dream. They helped me, but the proper way is to get some proper expert assessment and support. But one other thing that really started healing me more was giving. As soon as I became a doctor, I started working in hospital. The smile that the patients would give me, oh my God, that was just unbelievable. I said, oh, I'm useful. Of course, I was working another job, but for once, that my dream started. I started realizing my dream that, oh my God, I can do that. I can heal people.
And isn't then it I amazing? Isn't it amazing the joy that people can get from feeling useful? Something so simple. Obviously, in your context, being a doctor is not simple. But for every person, you can do things to help others that are so simple and can give so much joy.
Well, that's the exact formula of happiness. I'm glad you mentioned it. So scientifically, that's proven. It's actually not about the titles. It's not about doctorate levels or whatever you accumulate, materialistic money, this and that, houses. It's actually the fact that if we show kindness, acts of kindness, small or large, it brings that internal happiness to us that we cherish for a very long time with us. And that is simply the basics of happiness. And anybody can do that. So for me, I saw that in the form of medicine. But for other people, it could be in any other way, just helping the neighbors, doing another charity. Then I went on to set up our charity, Ariane Teleheal. Again, it's all encapsulated in my memoir, In the Wars, which highlights how I went about trying to heal more people in conflict zones. I set that up. And it is very simple. Through this Ariane Teleheal charity, we connect medics from the NHS and across the world to medics in low-resource countries on smartphones. So it's a pioneering telemedicine charity. But what it does is it acts on the collective compassion of people. So instead of me just helping, I facilitated this that so many people can act. Everybody gets rewarded. Even if we can't solve a case, we try to. And it's a 24/7 job for me, but still I feel absolutely happy in the morning knowing that I've been of service to the people.
What an incredible thing to have developed. And to be able to go to bed at night and know that you're helping people in Afghanistan and Syria, and the work you're doing for them, that kind of technology is amazing. How did you get the idea for it and start developing it?
So this is a very interesting topic. I know in here we talk a lot about the technology, innovation and so on. But actually, innovation comes out of problem solving and having a passion for a problem. That is the formula for innovation. If anybody wants to do something more efficient that doesn't exist, is to know a problem, understand it, have some sort of interest in that problem, and then know the people experiencing it. So for me, I had a close passion to it because of my experiences. I kept going back and forth to Afghanistan to visit my family and go to hospitals, ask the doctors, how would I be of service? At that time, I was a baby doctor, so I had very limited knowledge. But they would tell me all the problems, and I would make a note of it. And I soon realized that actually it's the lack of medical expertise. And they can't just fly on a plane to a conference or get their education upgraded. So I thought, you know what, can we do this? And that was the light bulb moment for me. One, seeing the problem. On the other hand, seeing that smartphones were everywhere. The internet was very cheap. Put the two together. And simply that the charity became a means of connecting the compassion of people to people in low-resource countries.
Such a simple idea, but helping such a complex problem. Waheed, is there any chance you still have the book and the stethoscope that doctor gave you when you were five?
I don't. I have written it in my memoir, and that's why I written that book, my own book. The reason why I wrote it is actually because I knew that somebody, that book changed my life. So I thought maybe through writing talking about my story or writing about it, I could change other people's lives as well.
And was it cathartic to put that down on paper for you, to write it all down?
I'm sorry?
Was it helpful to put it all down on paper?
It was. Even talking about my past memories, it is a healing process. And that is another key to going through mental health issues or traumas, is you can't just lock it away. You have to talk about it. You have to process it, no matter how hurtful, how painful it is. So every time I talk, there's a little bit of a burden that just peeled off me. Writing the book was a similar experience. It was a joy. Moments I was crying. My mom was suffering from cancer at the time. So it's really tough for me to write it. But now I feel very rewarded knowing that when people read it, that they can actually take maybe a few lessons away from it and understand what refugees go through, how to overcome adversity, how to never give up on the power of dream, even if it's a really distant place for many people.
So it's a story of hope, really.
It is.
So what's the name of it again, Waheed, in case people want to give it a read?
In the Wars.
In the Wars. And before I let you go, what are your hopes for the future of Afghanistan and its people at this stage?
The big hope I have is actually for humanity in general. That we see that refugees, we see immigrants being politicized, dehumanized, weaponized. I really would love for policymakers, for the right, left, all these people who are using policies or politics against them to just back off and just see them as human beings. See people who are in vulnerable positions to give them a hand of support rather than just because they can't speak up for themselves, to use them against each other so that they can promote their own policies. That is the hope I have, and I think that each one of us can contribute to that, to see each other and then see the vulnerable people in our society in the eye and look at each other from a perspective that what we can do to help each other rather than, you know, why you're against me or I'm against you.
I think it's a really, really important point. And like you said, it doesn't have to be huge. It can just be with your neighbour. Instead of judgment, I think we could all learn to show a little bit of empathy towards each other and try not to judge people when you haven't walked in their shoes and just try to be a little bit kinder. Waheed Ariane, thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. And I suppose actually more importantly for everything you're doing for people with Telehealth.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.